Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 212 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's the return of Royden Lepp, the creator of one of my very favorite ongoing graphic novel series, and that's Rust. If you've ever had a chance to read it, you know just how great the storytelling is and how profound the story is, as well as how vibrant the characters are. Three volumes have come out so far, and a fourth one is in the works, not far away, but there's also other news on the Rust horizon, and Royden's going to tell us all about it. We talk a little bit about how the story came to be and what we might see in the future. So I'm sure you're going to want to hear what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. I want to welcome back to the podcast Royden Lepp, the creator of a book I really love, a series of books actually, called Rust. And there's some news on the Rust front, so I want to get right to it. How are you doing today, Royden?
I'm doing great, Wayne. It's good to be back. I always love talking to you.
And it's always good talking with you, too, because I love the stuff you're doing. So why don't we jump right into the current news that came out recently about Rust, that there's a soft cover program coming under the Archaea imprint for Rust?
Yeah. I'm pretty excited about it. And we were just speculating on how many soft covers Archaea has done so far. But yeah, in the past, Archaea really focused on hardcover for the book market. And that was fantastic. I love Rust and hardcover, but really about time to get this into the hands of as many readers as possible. And I think getting a soft cover out there helps do that.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. Now, according to the release that I saw, it's going to contain the prelude stories from the first three original graphic novels you did, as well as a preview of the fourth.
Yeah, so the kind of story behind this, I sat with some of the folks at Archaea, and I was just saying, you know, volume four is taking a long time. I got a little boy at home, and that's something that's new to my schedule. Mm-hmm. So I had this idea. We'd always been talking about doing softcover, and I had this idea of taking the prologues, which are essentially the first 30 pages of each volume, mm-hmm. and arranging them in chronological order, because I tell them not only broken up, but kind of backwards memento style, mm-hmm. and what they would read like as a standalone book. And so we did that. We pulled them all out, pulled the first 30 pages of volume four, which no one had read yet, and put them in order and read it, and we were kind of surprised. It was like, oh, wow, that's a nice, complete story. Why don't we use that to kick off the softcover line? So that's kind of how that happened.
Have you done the cover already for this softcover?
Yes, it's the one that's out there in the announcement or in Diamond right now. Mm-hmm. It's, if anyone's seen it already, the image of Jet flying through the forest.
Okay, that looks good. What's the deadline that people have to order? Let's get right to that, because that's important to know.
Wow, that's a great thing to know, and I actually don't know.
Okay.
I know that it's in this issue, Diamonds, I believe it just came out like a week or two ago.
Right.
Maybe. So people are ordering it now. It's for March releases. So okay. This is a book that'll be on shelves in March.
Okay. So I would say to people, if you're interested in the book, and I hope you are, is to contact your comic store and let them know about this. It's called Rust. And it's called Rust the Boy Soldier. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, we're continuing with the tradition of kind of giving them all a subtitle, I guess you'd call it. I'm not sure what the term is, because it focuses on the main character, Jet Jones, in this time before he meets the Taylor family. It's really about the Long War and about what shaped Jet Jones' behavior and his character and who he is.
Now, this collects the three original graphic novels, Rust, Visitor in the Field, Rust, Secrets of the Cell, and Rust, Death of the Rocket Boy, which is not the final volume, I always have to point out to people, because they kind of think that's the end of it, but it is not.
The final volume is called Soul in the Machine, So that's the title for volume 4, and so this will be the first 30 pages you'll be able to read from The Soul in the Machine.
Can't wait for that. I'm going to buy it just to get those 30 pages, I think. Can't wait for that, because I've been reading this all along, and as I've said before, I'm really devoted to the book because it's something different and very moving. Your ability to create characters and make them breathe to me is really something special. And from the very first moment I ever saw the book, I had to dive into it and get into it, and I was just hooked. So I just think it's a terrific book. Why don't you describe to people the basic premise of the Rust series of books?
Sure, yeah. And thank you for those kind words. That's my main focus in the books, really, is to tell a story with real characters and real heart in them. And that is kind of the premise of the story. It's about this family. The Rust story arc is about this family, the Taylor family, and they're kind of living in this alternate universe after a great long war was fought, and robots were used in this great long war. And that war kind of looks a little bit like World War One. It looks a little bit like World War Two, but it's neither. This is not an alternate history. It's another universe, really. Mm-hmm. And so the Taylors are struggling in this post-war era, trying to keep this farm together on this prairie land, trying to keep the family unit together. Roman Taylor is the oldest son in the family, and he's just trying to keep his father's farm together after his father doesn't come back from the war. Mm-hmm. And one day this character, this boy named Jet Jones, crashes in his field, and he's got a jetpack attached to his back, and he's being chased by a giant old war robot. Mm-hmm. Anything more than that's kind of a spoiler, but that's what kicks off the story of Rust. Mm-hmm. And the Rust the Boy Soldier book that comes out in March essentially focuses on those flashbacks, on those prologues that we see that just give us these little snippets into what happened during the war. Mm-hmm. To make Jet run from his holders, from his creators, from the place where he came from and the things he was made to do, if that doesn't spoil too much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's kind of what that book focuses on. It's coming out in March.
I want to make sure people know, too, the first volume has an introductory price of $10.99, which is an amazing price for the three volumes like that. And all the extra material, it's going to be really worth the money to be able to get that. I always think, too, that people need to know ahead of time that even though some of the colors on the cover are full color, the inside is a sepia tone. There's black in the sepia tones, which is a yellowish-brownish kind of color. And I was just kind of curious, we've talked a little bit about this before, but I think people should know, why did you choose to do that rather than do a full-color storyline?
Yeah, it was kind of a joint decision that I'd made when I was talking with Mark Smiley, who was originally at Archaea. He's not with them anymore, but when we were originally talking about the book and the design of the book and what their vision for the story was, we shared one of the common views was to make it in sepia tone. I'd done a little more than half the book in just grayscale tones because I knew that that was probably, at the time I had done it, a little more enticing to publishers because it was easier and cheaper to print. Mm-hmm. But I always had this idea of a sepia tone that would be a slight alteration that would give this like warmth and sense of nostalgia or sense of historical place to a story that doesn't have any history, you know, real history. And it's amazing what the sepia does to kind of make you feel not only the heat and the warmth of the prairies, but the feeling like this is a story that took place in the past. Mm-hmm. And it was when I was sitting with Mark Smiley, and he was like, yeah, what do you think about printing this book in sepia tone? And that's one of the things that really sealed the deal with me. I was just like, we're talking the same language, we've got the same goals and ideas for this book, and that made me really excited.
Well, a lot of times we've had black and white volumes, and it really depends on the story how the choice of color works. A lot of people, though, think that if it's not full color, then you're not getting your money's worth, but that's not true. Because in this book in particular, because there's a lot of wheat fields and things around, and other, you know, you've got robots, sort of a metallic brownish kind of look to things that are going on. It really is appropriate, I think, to the story. And I really like the way that it looks. Honestly, the pacing and stuff is so good that you literally dive in and, man, the book just zooms right past as I read it. And I just enjoy the characters and the pacing and everything in it. And I think that if people have not given this a shot yet, you really need to consider this book to get ready for the fourth volume. So I really love what you've done with it and you continue to do with it. And, you know, these prologues, other little stories, those came out on Free Comic Book Days, didn't they?
Well, for the Free Comic Book Day, we did something different. We actually focused on making original stories for the Free Comic Book Day. So I can't remember what year was the first year that I did Free Comic Book Day, but I actually set about to do 8 pages of original story content. And then once we had that, it was kind of like, well, this is a, you know, original little short story, essentially. We might as well publish that in the back of volume 2. Mm-hmm. And then likewise, we did that in the back of volume 3. Mm-hmm. And so each hardcover volume has those excerpts essentially from Free Comic Book Day as part of the book. And I believe we'll be doing exactly the same thing with the softcover. The difference with the softcovers that I think I want readers to be aware of is, you know, if you buy the hardcover, each hardcover starts with a prologue. And it's the first 30 pages of the book, and it gives you this little snippet of view into the history of Jones. Whereas if you started this for the first time and you're starting with the boy soldier, you'll get that whole prologue up front. And then when you go out and get volume 1, Visitor in the Field, in softcover, when it comes out the end of this year, then it will not be exactly like the hardcover version. It'll be missing those prologue pages pulled out. So it's a really different reading experience, and I feel like it'll kind of be valuable because existing readers of Rust may want to choose that experience, and new readers to the series, I think, will enjoy it as much but differently than those who started with the hardcovers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the idea of putting in a little more of a chronological order. It will be good for
you. Yeah, it's a different way to see the story, and it was really interesting to do because I didn't write it that way. You know, I didn't even thumbnail it that way. I had it all broken apart in my head, so it was interesting to reassemble it for the first time seeing it chronologically. I think it works really well.
Great. That's interesting that you saw it that way. As the creator, it's something that we can look forward to as well. Really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the notion of robots, I was reading some other interviews that you had done, and I was fascinated to find out that the whole business of Jet and the robots involved in the series were inspired by Terminator 2. I kind of got a kick out of reading that, and I was like, it's interesting because you saw 2 before you saw 1, but that had such a huge impact on you as far as like using the robots and designing them and things like that. Do you want to expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, I know that there's not a really strong correlation there. You know, people would look at Rust and say, oh, you must be inspired by The Rocketeer or even Astro Boy, which are great comparisons and great stories. But those were not the things that I started with or even big pillars of entertainment in my childhood. Mm-hmm. I saw Terminator 2 when I was probably just a little bit too young to see it. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what age I was, but I did see it before Terminator 1 because I was definitely too young to see Terminator 1. Mm-hmm. But when I saw Terminator 2, there was just this incredible power that was given to these machines. In the story, they felt so unstoppable. And that gave such a great sense of fear and put the characters in such peril. Like, how on earth are they going to stop these machines that just keep coming? That's what was really powerful to me, but also the way that second story was told, in that it just starts with the greatest chase scene I've ever seen in movies, with the semi-truck and the motorcycle in the aqueduct there, probably shot in LA now that I think of it. Mm-hmm. But I remember in that first scene in the movie, that first chase scene after it was over, I just thought, how on earth is the movie going to top this? Like, it just felt like that should have been the climax of this movie. I'd never seen a movie that just cut straight to such an intense action scene that was full of so many great moments. And that, you can see, I did try to do with Rust in the first volume. I just wanted to jump right into a moment that could feel like the climax from the end of the book, as opposed to something that you would find at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that continues to influence me. I always think about Terminator 2, how after the first hour or first half hour, I think it was, I just thought, well, how could this movie possibly get any better? You know, it's just, you know, that first bit was so good. But, you know, I saw it at a particular age too, and sometimes things impact you just in the right way. And I still think it's a great movie though.
Oh, yeah. You still like the Terminator franchise?
I was disappointed with a couple of the more recent ones, mm-hmm. and so I didn't catch the last one, which I think is Terminator Genesis. Mm-hmm. But I've actually heard it was quite good. Mm. So it's on my list to watch, but nothing, really none of them compare to that second one. There was something really special that happened in that storytelling, and just the way it came out and the time it came out in the world, it was such a powerful, fresh idea and executed so perfectly for me anyway when I saw it. Mm-hmm. Even if that movie came out at this time, I think it could even be lost amongst all the sci-fi and techie stories that we see these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, technology in a way is scary and also is encouraging, you know. We can do so much more than we used to be able to before, but on the other hand, you know, the machines are doing more of what we used to do, and that's a little scary to some of us.
Mm-hmm. So. There's great robot movies out. I actually liked Chappie quite a bit. I thought that was a fun movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's been lots of others that kind of are a little bit more timely, I think.
Okay, well, we brought up the notion of movies. I always have to ask, Rust, I think, would make a fabulous animated film.
I agree with you. Yeah, the ability to make that happen is far out of my power. Mm. There's been lots of interest in Rust over the years. It was under option with Fox for quite a few years, just recently came out of that, and it was for a live-action movie. Mm. And as Hollywood goes, there's, you know, kind of ups and downs with that, and right now there's no plans for it to be a movie, but I still have plans for it. I would still love to see it come out someday on the big screen. And initially, I would have agreed with you that I think it would have made a great animated movie. Mm-hmm. But through the kind of journey I've been through the last few years, I would love to see this as a live action, young adult, all ages movie, I think would be really cool.
Well, our special effects have gotten so much better.
Yeah, it's way easier to do these kinds of things. And I'm a big fan of less is more, too. I think that it doesn't have to be Transformer kind of epic robot story. I think that you can get away with a little bit less and have a much more powerful impact when it comes to effects. But that's all my opinion. I don't have a whole lot to say, even if something like that happens. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope it does. Yeah. Let's hope somebody comes along and says, hey, it's time to do this. We've been waiting too long. Yeah, of course, the good thing is the movie, that it doesn't happen before we get to the final.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, not at this point. If it all happened very rapidly right now, I'd still beat everybody to Volume 4, I think.
Well, I want to talk about Volume 4, but I don't want to do that until we get to the end. So there's a couple of questions I had for you that I'd like to talk about. Is the notion, and some people are real puzzled by this, because, you know, even in Terminator, you don't see them usually take on the form of a child. And yet Jet is a young boy. You know, his appearance is that of a young boy. And so that's what makes, on some levels, this story stand out to me, was that, because, you know, children are scary things. And, of course, now you've got a child of your own. Yeah. I've never had a child, so I can't really talk to that. But when I see a kid and I kind of see the reasoning that goes on, I don't get it anymore. And so, to me, having Jet be a young boy is really something different, because on many levels, he's more boy than he is Rocket. Which I like about the character.
Yeah, definitely. He's very, I depict him as very human throughout the story. Yeah, I think it comes from something that I see reoccurring in my artwork that's not necessarily conscious in my storytelling and artwork, that I like to see that juxtaposition of kind of the most innocent and vulnerable people that we know and have in our world, which is often children, against those things that are the most terrifying or dangerous. Mm-hmm. Because it just creates instant chemistry for storytelling. Mm-hmm. And in the case of Jet Jones, it's unifying those two things and alters your expectations. This boy that looks like a boy soldier, like somebody enlisted way, way too young because the war is going on for too long. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case at all. This is someone that you would underestimate, as we underestimate children. Mm-hmm. And as the story shows, he's the last person that you should underestimate. Mm-hmm. I like that because it's the whole judge a book by its cover thing. You can't really tell what's on the inside. That's really a lot of the themes of Rust and of Jet Jones. I just find those stories interesting to tell. And I find that I unconsciously kind of gravitate back to those kinds of depictions of children, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a sentence that appears in the books, and I think it shows just how well you do the humanity aspect of these different characters. And which Jet is talking to the person who made him, and he says, isn't it always doing the right thing better than having to choose? Mm-hmm. You know, and then he talks about, then he gets told that we can't code our own victory. But, you know, there's a lot of people who would like to think that doing the right thing would just be automatic. And he doesn't because he's very human in that way. And if I wanted to tell people how good the characters are, that in that one little discussion, I think that tells you just how human and how interesting the people are.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite conversations in the series, and that is a piece of the Boy Soldier book, because that's part of the prologue, so you'll get to read that part. But yeah, I won't hide the fact that I got to explore a lot of philosophy in those discussions. I often refer to that conversation that Jed has with his maker as essentially my conversation with God. It's those questions that you could ask. Mm-hmm. Why am I given the ability to choose? Doesn't it make more sense just to make me do the right thing all the time? Mm-hmm. And that sounds like a good solution, but if you follow it to its end, it seems that's a life void of freedom. Mm-hmm. And we know the power and the joy of freedom. Mm-hmm. And so all that stuff comes out really easily when you start talking about machines and programming and robots. And it's a very accessible conversation when you kind of distill it down to that analogy, I guess it is. But it's enjoyable for me to kind of explore that stuff in the context of a story like this and try to keep it simple and yet, you know, at the same time, a very complex question mm-hmm. that makes readers think a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, honestly, this is the kind of thing that makes science fiction fun to read, is you get to examine philosophical issues and you get to understand the different perspectives on it.
And yeah, so, absolutely.
Oh, I love a story that makes me think. You know, there are so few of them. Most of the time, it's just flailing about and punching and kicking. But to have something that makes me think about what's being told and what the possibilities are. See, all this stuff sets up your fourth book for me, because I don't have any idea what you're going to end this. I am not in any way sure what's going to happen. I love that. I can't wait to see what you do. I mean, I can think of possibilities.
I hope it's satisfying.
Oh, yeah. I expect it will be. But, you know, you can't help it. When you watch enough television, you read enough stuff, you try to figure out where people are going to go. And some people are real obvious. You know, there's a lot of storytelling on television, particularly, where I would turn on, there was a show called Heart to Heart or something like that. And it was a married couple, and it was so nice to see a happily married couple on the television. But the storytelling was so obvious. Like 3 minutes into it, I'd be saying, okay, she gets back with him, and they do this, and they do that. And then 50 minutes later, that's what they would do. And I would be so disappointed that I couldn't get that hour back. But with your stuff, I don't have any idea how you're going to wrap this up. I could think of things, and I would never postulate on that, because I would much rather read your story than say this kind of stuff. And, of course, I don't want any spoilers, because I want to enjoy the thing when it hits out. And it's coming out in 2017 is what I see. I've seen you, though, give certain summations as to what the final book might contain. Do you want to give a little bit of a preview, but not a spoiler, on what we'll see in Soul in the Machine?
Yeah, I mean, I always want readers to be mostly satisfied, I'll say that, I guess. But as far as like summarizing Volume 4 in a way that doesn't spoil, I've never been shy to say that there's lots of answers that I'm not going to be giving in Volume 4. Mm-hmm. And I've said that from the beginning of the series, I believe, because I think that the mystery behind some of those questions is really powerful. And a lot of the questions that are brought up are not necessary to the story. They make the story more interesting and complex, because you realize there's parts of the world you don't know. Mm-hmm. To me, it's kind of like it takes the air out of the balloon a little bit when at the end it's just like, oh, and this is all revealed and the curtain is pulled all the way back and here's all the stuff you didn't see and oh my goodness, now I understand it. Some movies that's really appropriate for, where you're just hanging on that information. Mm-hmm. But the world of Rust is a lot of mystery. We don't know very much about the war. Mm-hmm. And I would be willing to say you're not going to find out a whole lot more about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you probably do in the prologues now. In this next book, The Boy Soldier, is a good picture of what happened. But as far as like the global, you know, the universe of Rust, I'm not pulling back the curtains on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the fate of the Taylor family, mm-hmm. the farm, and of Jet is, how can I put it? I've always appreciated stories where the ending is not necessarily what's preferred, mm-hmm. but you realize it's what's required. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that gives too much away. There's not a big bomb in there behind my words, but sometimes it's like, well, what I want to happen is I want this couple to get together and I want this person to save the day and destroy all the bad guys. Mm-hmm. But that's actually not what happens in life. So when you finish the story in that way, you realize oh, that wasn't realistic, and I find it less believable, mm-hmm. even though you know the audience isn't always able to articulate that. Mm-hmm. So if that helps you, that's kind of where we're headed.
Well, I have a friend of mine, and she always wants a happy ending. You know, she'll go to the end of the book, and she'll read the ending to make sure it's a happy one, and then she'll read the rest of the book. But my feeling is if it's always going to be a happy ending, that kind of limits your choices as a storyteller. You know, a good ending is better than a happy ending, I think, to me.
Exactly. That's very accurate. To me, there's a difference between a good ending and a happy ending. Mm-hmm. And there is sometimes bitterness in the happy ending. The best stories I've read are the ones that kind of leave you feeling like, oh, I wish it didn't end like that, mm-hmm. but that kind of makes sense that it ended like that.
Exactly. You know? That's exactly what I like. I like to when it gets there and you – it's like the first season of 24, which was on Fox. They filmed where the wife survived the attack, and they all happily walked off into the sunset. And then they did the one that they showed, which was her actually getting killed inside the terrorist attack headquarters. You know, the place that should have been safest is where she was killed. And I remember watching that on the DVD at that time, tell you how long ago that was. And we got together and a bunch of us were talking about the fact that it would have been such a blah ending if that had been what had happened, if the happy ending was the one that was the least interesting of the mm-hmm. bunch. And so I'm all for happy endings when they're appropriate, but I also think that I want a good story. I want things that tell me good and interesting things, and some of the stuff I have to say that you've been saying about the fact that you're not going to reveal everything, that encourages me that there may be more rust in our future after all this is kind of what I'm hoping that...
I won't lie, that's part of it too. I've always said that Volume 4 is the end of this story arc, and it is. I haven't changed my mind on that, but mm-hmm. I do realize that I cracked open this world, this mm-hmm. Rust universe, to tell this really specific story about the Taylors. Mm-hmm. There's so much more we could tell, mm-hmm. and there's so many more stories that I think would be fascinating to piece together within the world that have nothing to do with the Taylors, mm-hmm. but are part of the consequences of this universe and this mm-hmm. long war and the robots, all that stuff. I think it would be really fun to tell other stories, but I'm not going to make any promises. It's been a long road to get to Volume 4.
Well, that's the thing. It's up to you. You're the storyteller. You know, we all we can do is kind of, you know, say we support you if you want to do it. We're here for you. But if there are other stories you prefer to do, then that's up to you. As far as I could. Yeah. Let me just say one thing. I was reading an interview that you did back on the Nerdspan website several months ago, and you gave a very short summary of things that might happen in the fourth book. Since that came out like months ago, is that okay just to read this and kind of get your comments real quickly on that?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Go for it.
You said that what was going to happen was Roman will be coming face to face with his mistakes on the farm. All of Jet's secrets will be revealed to the Taylor family. Oz will find redemption, and the Taylor family farm will never be the same. It's going to be a real ride, which is, I think, an interesting expression right there. Any kind of things that you want to elaborate on that? Again, I can't wait to read the book, so please don't ruin the ride, the real ride, which I love that. Most people don't use that phrase, so I thought that was a great way to describe it. What comments would you make about that?
Yeah, that's still all very true. It really will kind of leave nothing the same. Mm. How could I expand on that? I think one of the things that I've had fun with Rust was the challenge of telling a story in this static environment of the Taylor farm and thinking about the farm as a character itself, mm-hmm. as a place that you're familiar with. When you close your eyes, you know where the treehouse is and where the yard barn is and where Roman's shop is. Like it's a place that's familiar to you enough that it almost becomes a character in the story. And that's something I've been really interested in, because the feeling of somebody or some things invading that farm makes it more personal when you read it. And that's something that I was really interested in when I started the story. So yeah, to those statements, you know, that the farm will never be the same. That's kind of what I'm expanding on there, those words. But as far as the ride, as I've shown in the first few books, I like to tell action in comics in a really particular way. And I didn't even really realize this until I sat down to start on Volume 4 a while back, that it was like, wow, this book is a lot of action. There's lots of moments of reckoning in between and conversations that we've been waiting to hear for a long time.
Well, I always ask this question. I asked last time this question. I'm going to ask again, but in a different way. They've come out in hardcover, and the first one, the hardcover was sort of a red, rusty sort of a color. Second one was blue. Third one was a lime green kind of. Have you picked the color already for the fourth book cover?
I haven't officially picked it.
Okay.
But I will say that I have already completed the cover of the fourth book.
Ah.
And that really changed everything because I had to see that cover with the color. So I had an idea of what I wanted the color to be. Mm-hmm. And then once I completed the cover art, the color changed. So I won't tell you what the color is now, but I will tell you that my intention when I started Volume 4 was to have Volume 4 be kind of a gunmetal charcoal, kind of a dark gray. And then when I looked at that color with the cover, it changed. Not a whole lot, but it changed a little bit.
See, I always conjecture it's going to be yellow. But I don't know why. I don't know why that matters so much to me, but it does. I just think that because I want to have them all next to each other, and the way the color covering the color spectrum to me would just be cool if it was a yellow book. But
I know yellow is the one that's missing, but I can't picture yellow because yellow is such a bright color, and and really on that fabric it ends up looking kind of mustard, you know. But I mean, we have ability to choose a lot of colors, but it's the closing of the book and it's the closing of the story, and I pictured kind of like the darkest book being kind of the richest and the strongest and the biggest element in closing the story arc. And it probably will still be a dark color, but yeah, it is important to me that when I line them up on the shelves, they look like a complete package. So that has to be included as well. It's not officially chosen, but it was interesting that once I finished the cover artwork, I was like, oh, I don't think it's going to be gray anymore. It's going to be something else.
Very cool. Very cool. I can't wait for it. Now, the release date is in 2017. Do you have like a quarter? Maybe in 2017 we might see it, or is that kind of up still? When it's done, it's done.
Wayne, I sure hope it's the first quarter. I mean, it's been difficult managing my new schedule. I really enjoy working on the book, but I've had several setbacks in the last year for lots of different reasons I won't get into. But man, I hope it's that first quarter. Okay. That's all I can say.
Well, we're with you on that one. I'd love to see it in the first quarter because I would love to read it and get to the conclusion. I think it's going to be great stuff. I'd love someday to ever find out when your son's able and he reads it, what he thinks of it. That would be a real interesting experience.
Yeah, I'm interested in that too. I almost have like a thought of putting it away on a shelf so he doesn't even really know they exist. And then one day I'll just say, hey, here's some books I wrote before you were born.
And he gets to read them and see what how his response to it. That would be fun.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't sound like Jed is based in any way on him. Because, you know, you started this before he came into being, so it can't really be.
Many, many, many years before he was even a thought in the mind.
Just a gleam in your eye at that point.
Yeah.
So, well, I have to say, Roy, great stuff as always. I have a feeling that this is keeping you busy for a while, so I won't ask whether you've got other projects in the works, because I bet you Rust is going to be the one that's going to be keeping you going, at least through maybe the first quarter of 2017. But I hope we get to see more from you. I'd really love to read more storytelling from you.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to stop telling stories like this in this format, I'm sure, but I'm putting 100% of my extra time, I should say. I still work a full-time job in the video game industry, so all of my extra time goes towards Volume 4 because I want to get that into the hands of readers as fast as possible. I have lots of ideas of other books I'd like to do, but I'm trying not to entertain them until...
Well, we'll be there because the Rust has been such a great ride. I talk about a real ride, a real great ride it's been. And I'm really looking forward to other stuff that you get to do. So if I see your name on a book, I'll be buying it, whether it's Rust or not. So keep it up.
Thank you so much, Wayne. That's really encouraging. Helps me in the late nights when I'm up working on Volume 4.
Okay, well, can't wait.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be back next episode when I'll have another terrific conversation with another wonderful comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.